just like an athlete sometimes looks at a game and decides that they might be able to go back in for a season or even a simple exhibition, and in the same way that an actor or theatrical performer feels like they can walk the boards one more time, I occasionally get an urge, a sense of duty, really, to do another long-form documentary. It's not going to happen, but the feelings that I have are valid, and I thought I'd mention what drives me to want to make documentaries while also explaining why I'm not going to. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. My record stands at 3 completed documentaries and 3 uncompleted documentaries, along with a whole range of interviews, appearances, and footage that I contributed to other projects. Occasionally, I forget that I was in a movie, and suddenly the director will tell me that it's finally out and I can enjoy it. And then I've actually scrubbed through sometimes trying to find my part, seeing if I can even remember sitting down for an interview. Being interviewed is pretty easy. You sit down, they set the lights on you, or ask you to set the lights on yourself. You get hit with a barrage of either questions you knew were coming or questions you're hearing for the first time, and then you just answer them. People have to take your words and weave them into the tapestry of their final work, a process which, I can attest to, can sometimes take years. You end up being part of a larger project, while frankly not having to do a whole lot of work to do it. You just have to be there. The creators have to decide both that you should be in it and what to do with you after they've got you. On the other hand, making documentaries, especially the way that I prefer to, is a whole other level of energy. I always want it to be the case that when somebody sees something that I've created, especially an interwoven, educational, historical look at some sort of subject that I think hasn't gotten enough attention, I want them to feel, at the end, that they were educated, that they were told the truth, and that they were able to find their own conclusion from what they were shown, not relying on me to spoon-feed it to them. Making that sort of documentary is an incredible amount of work. You have to not just record interviews from a large pool of potential subjects. You have to negotiate for those interviews to begin with. While I say that it's easy for you to sit down to an interview, the effort being made by a team of people to even line you up, find the scheduling, how they're going to fit you in to their schedule, is a level of work that's, in some cases, truly intimidating. The last time that I felt like doing some sort of documentary, even though I had sworn them off, was about 5 years ago, when I decided I was going to do a documentary on the remaining BBSs that had dial-up in the United States. At the time, and mostly true now, they are usually FidoNet nodes doing a large amount of mail transfer and having a dial-up connection just in case. In other words, the dial-up is beside the point. The idea that there are people who are running bulletin boards that are only accessible via a phone, well, I'm not completely convinced there's any left in North America. That said, I'd love to be surprised. But even looking into that subject matter revealed to me that the amount of work to find what I estimated to be about 45 to 50 bulletin boards would have been months of work, months of editing, months of making arrangements and finding trends and building something together. Not because they couldn't be done any other way, but because that's how I do them. It's too late for me. Having something I call a documentary and adding it to the other 3 would be of a certain type, of a certain amount of energy, work that was necessary, required for me to feel comfortable, to know utterly the subject being talked about, to find experts both in creating the subject and experiencing the subject, and then weaving all their words together in a no-narrator-edited construction, in a quilt of words without a narrator. That's too much. And luckily, before I get too far, I'm able to stop. There's always hundreds of things waiting for me at the Internet Archive, a group of uploads that could really use a collection, somebody contacting me about a potential acquisition or asking for help and ideas in their own acquisitions, people who want to interview me, either recorded or not, for a school project where if I really feel that I want to tell a story, I can do it there. And of course, this podcast. I'm not saying the podcast is draining energy from me. I'm just making clear that there's an entire range of subjects I would have never broached, never talked about, if it wasn't for this. Maybe somewhere in the hundreds of episodes, there's a seed of a discussion that could be turned into a project, something somebody listening wants to do more about, and with me consulting about who they could talk to, which part they could discuss, and maybe even, against all odds, something coming out the other end. Lots changed since I was making documentaries. Cameras are very small, machines continue to be extremely powerful, and disk space to have all of this footage and to be able to find all of the trends and words within it have just increased in power. It's very much possible now to do an entire documentary without using any equipment that has a single spinning part, save a fan. That built-in toughness, that flexibility, and that small size means you can go places that otherwise would be an entire ordeal trying to get it on a plane, checking it in, paying for extra baggage, dealing with customs and security and all the other aspects. Now, a person with a backpack could be an entire studio. And the results of what they do, that could look as good as anything that was shot before 2000 and most things that were shot afterwards. The ability to absorb information, visual, audio, is just exponentially better. I don't feel that's the real barrier to ever doing it myself again. Now, I think a lot of it now is purely time. I feel, by the day, a fist enclosing me, with darkness beyond, telling me to take whatever energy I have and focus it on either explaining what I've learned, learning from others, or taking a pleasure in being alive and around and happy. I feel like philosophy and life outlook and goals and understanding yourself, self-actualization and self-awareness, were always seeds of a documentary. Built into that entire process was the desire to teach others and to understand yourself and your place in the world. It's just that between not having to worry about threading audio tape or working in a dark room with your film camera or trying to edit with razor blades and glue, these smaller but important components become all-encompassing. Now I think about a subject I want to do, I find myself asking questions not about the physical material, the ability to record things, the editing of footage, but is this a subject that is so important, so fundamental to understanding the human experience, but nobody's done it, and I've got to? Because that's what drove me. Through sleepless nights, weird hotel rooms, odd phone calls, awkward pauses, bizarre and weird consequences of actions I was taking, along with the lumps after I was done of people questioning my choices, even though I knew they were the ones I intended to make. That's what made it happen. There were plenty of times when I could have walked away, released the raw footage of the first three documentaries, and called it a day, said that it wasn't something I was able to do. But I pushed through because I had that sense of duty, of responsibility to a subject that could easily fade away. Hardly a month goes by that people don't write to me with their ideas of a documentary I should do, a sense of regret that they don't have me out there for them, taking the time and creating the kind of quality documentaries they think I can do. But my answer, and for anybody who's listened to me for any period of time, it's not changed. Every day at the Internet Archive feeds for me a need that 100 hours of filming and editing and polishing, producing, and promoting could ever do. When I find somebody has rescued hours of obscure footage or digitized previously lost texts and audio, I feel like I'm a part of their team, like I'm one of the people whose job is to get it done. Not just take their PDFs and make sure that they rendered properly, but classify them, give them metadata, put them in sets that allow discovery, retrieval, education, memory, justification for the work, for that work that was done. I'm delighted to be that last little piece of solder between two powerful wires of accomplishment and reception that exist at the archive. Watching somebody who has spent months acquiring, scanning, fixing up a work, and then giving them the advice on how to make it look as good as it can in the archive's interface feels, to me, about as great as if I had done it all myself. So, looking around at subjects that may or may not need my attention, more often than not, I realize that it has been done, and I just want to do things a little smoother, at a higher resolution, with somewhat better sound, better graphics, and my own particular style in how I edit things. And that's not really making a documentary. It's kind of making a commentary on someone else's documentary. So whenever I have this urge, this overriding feeling of wanting to do something like a documentary, I usually find myself falling back into some of the long-form explainer videos that are on YouTube and sometimes the Internet Archive. Creators like Steak Bentley or H Bomber Guy, Noclip, Zoe Blade, even Red Letter Media. And I find a satisfaction, a sense of not having it all on my shoulders. People with distinct voices and powerful editing and strong support from their audience will get the job done for me. Maybe the lesson here is that it's less about doing work for me now than determining where my work is best used. What things can I do that nobody else can do? And when I wake up, how soon, after a groggy walking around and making sure that my email is caught up and that the sun is out, do I turn to those unique tasks, those one and only duties that only I can really take on? And how fast can I do them? And how much fun am I going to have making them happen? This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Josiah Lusher, James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, John Sturm, Eugene, Martin, Sembiance, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I should say that I've done some tests. What if I did an explainer video? What if I created some sort of half-hour to two-hour video that was editing of already accessible assets and simply put over it my voice? My voice in a fast-talking, hyper-edited style that told you about what was going on, had a little bit of cynicism and sardonic laughter throughout, maybe a touch of irony, a little bit of strange jokes at my own expense. And would I be doing something new and interesting? Or would I just be chasing trends, chasing after what others are doing, and adding a very, very slight amount of my own spin on it? Maybe an announcement of interesting things on the Internet Archive, presented as kind of a fun waterfall of words. Maybe I'll come up with some other explainer about a subject so obscure, so one of a kind, so deep in the lore of vintage computing, that it was waiting for me, just me, to reveal it all. Maybe. But in the meantime, instead of dreaming about what I might do, it's all about the reality of what I have to do.